April 13th, 1976. Jessup, Maryland. Ralph Sigler, a 47-year-old chief warrant officer with the U.S. Army, is found dead inside a motel room after an apparent suicide, and it is believed that he electrocuted himself. For years, Ralph had been working in espionage as a counterintelligence agent who provided classified information to the Soviet Union, but since he has fallen under suspicion for failing several polygraph tests, the Army concludes that Ralph elected to take his own life. However, Ralph's family discovers a number of discrepancies, including some unexplained injuries on his body, to make them suspect Ralph was tortured before he was murdered, but the actual truth about what happened remains shrouded in controversy. After that, the trail went cold. Hello everyone, and welcome to our latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host Robin Warder, and today we're going to be covering a unique story involving spies and espionage, the unexplained 1976 death of Ralph Sigler. You might be familiar with this case from Unsolved Mysteries, as it involves a chief warrant officer from the Army who spent several years working as a double agent by intentionally providing disinformation to spies from the Soviet Union. However, things eventually reached the point where the Army began to suspect that Ralph had been supplying secrets to the Russians that he wasn't supposed to, and just as they were about to start investigating him as a possible traitor, he was found dead inside a motel room of an apparent suicide. But Ralph's method of suicide, which involved wrapping wire around his arms and electrocuting himself, was so unusual that his family doubted the official cover story and believed there were enough discrepancies to show that he was actually the victim of foul play. Ralph's wife and daughter would spend years attempting to uncover the truth about what happened to him, not only to seek justice for his death, but to restore his reputation and dispel all notions that he betrayed his country. To this day, the Army has never wavered from the official ruling that Ralph's death was a suicide, but there were enough odd aspects to suggest there might be something more to this story, so we're going to explore all the different angles on today's episode. However, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review on any of those sites to help spread the word. The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as little as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, which may include stickers and thank you cards, early access to episodes, and bonus content. So with all that out of the way, let us now explore the bizarre unexplained death of Ralph Sigler. Our story begins in 1976, and our central figure is 47-year-old Ralph Sigler. Originally born in Czechoslovakia, Ralph emigrated to the United States with his father when he was still an infant and would join the army at age 18. In 1955, while stationed in Germany, Ralph met his wife Ilsa, and they currently reside in El Paso, Texas with their 17-year-old daughter, Karen. After serving in the army for nearly 30 years, Ralph now holds the rank of chief warrant officer, and he works as an electronics specialist at the Air Defense Artillery School at Fort Bliss, as well as the White Sands Missile Range in New Mexico. Ralph has also spent the past several years working as a quote-unquote special courier for the Army, which requires him to spend long periods of time away from his family on classified assignments. At around 4 p.m. on April the 13th, Ilsa was working her job at a dress shop in El Paso when she suddenly received a surprising phone call from Ralph. A week and a half earlier, Ralph had traveled to Maryland for a debriefing at Fort Meade, the headquarters for the U.S. Army Intelligence Agency. According to Ilsa, Ralph sounded very distressed during the phone call, and she could hear what she described as a screeching sound of an electronic apparatus in the background. Ralph said, quote, "Just listen to me. Get a respectable lawyer. Sue the U.S. Army. I'm dying. I never lied," end quote, before the call abruptly ended. Earlier that day, Ralph's daughter Karen said she received a similar phone call from him at their home, in which he sounded distressed, and asked Karen what her plans were for the future. When Karen asked Ralph if anything was wrong, she said he started saying a sentence before the line abruptly went dead. The situation caused enough concern that Ilsa rushed home and called Ralph's superiors at Fort Bliss to try and find out what was going on with them in Maryland. She was eventually informed that Ralph was staying at a Holiday Inn in the unincorporated community of Jessup. Ilsa was given the motel's phone number, but all of her calls to Ralph's room went unanswered. The following morning, Ilsa was visited at her home by some army officials from Fort Bliss, who informed her that Ralph was dead. Word had apparently made it back to Fort Meade that Ilsa was unable to reach Ralph, so at around 11 p.m. on the evening of April the 13th, his superior, Army Intelligence Officer Louis Martel, was dispatched to the Holiday Inn to check on him. After receiving no answer to repeated phone calls and knocks, Martel convinced the manager to open the door to Ralph's third floor room. When Martel walked inside the room, he found Ralph lying face down on the floor next to a desk chair, which had been stacked on top of a larger easy chair. The chairs were blocking the door to the adjacent motel room and positioned next to a light switch. Wires from a pair of 12-inch, 2-ply lamp cords had been wrapped around both of Ralph's biceps, and a paper cup which had contained spilled water was in his right hand. After Martel brought in the Maryland State Police to perform an investigation, they came to the conclusion that Ralph's death was a very elaborate suicide. There were no signs of forced entry or struggle, the room's door had been locked and bolted from the inside, and no witnesses reported hearing or seeing anything suspicious that night. Based on the evidence, it appeared that Ralph had cut the cords off both lamps inside the room, stripped the insulation off them, and wrapped the wires around each of his biceps. Ralph then plugged one of the cords into an electrical socket and stacked the two chairs before climbing on top of them, so he could be right next to the light switch on the wall, which activated the electrical socket. After placing his thumb in the paper cup of water so it could act as a conductor, Ralph turned on the light switch with his elbow, and this caused a fatal charge of 110 volts of electricity to travel through his body. The impact knocked Ralph off the chairs onto the floor face first, and investigators would say that his nose had bled into the carpet. A handwritten note would be found on hotel stationery which read, quote, "1. I don't know what I'm guilty of. 2. Then why the positive response? 3. Acting. 4. Lying. 5. Don't know the difference. 6. Too bad. I've given up all hope. I wish I knew. I tried too hard. I'm dead," end quote. Martel would later say that he found a notebook in Ralph's jacket containing handwriting which seemed to match the writing on the note. Ralph had also apparently written in the notebook that he wanted to be cremated. However, when Ralph's personal effects were later turned over to his family, this notebook was not with them. While Ralph's family had difficulty accepting the suicide story, and their suspicions would be heightened when Ilsa received a letter from Ralph 2 days after his death. The letter was dated April the 10th, and pretty much outlined the same things Ralph had said to Ilsa during his final phone call to her, and read, quote, "Should anything happen to me, suicide, death, or accident, sue the U.S. Army for being the cause, naming specifically the following as defendants," end quote. Ralph then listed off the names of people he had worked with in both the Army and the FBI, and his last line would read, quote, "If nothing happens and I return, give this back to me," end quote. Ralph's funeral service would soon be held, and his daughter Karen saw his body for the first time inside his casket. She was shocked to discover that Ralph's nose was broken, his head appeared to have a dent in it, the partial plate containing his two front teeth were missing, and some of his other teeth looked cracked and jagged. Ralph also appeared to have a number of strange cuts, bruises, and marks on his hands and arms, and it gave Karen the impression that her father had been the victim of a physical assault. Investigators tried to account for this by explaining that the injuries to Ralph's face had been caused by his fall to the floor from the stack of chairs, and the marks on his arms and hands were the result of the electrical shock Ralph received after he tied the wires around his biceps. Ralph's first autopsy was performed by the Maryland State Medical Examiner, who concluded that his death was a suicide through electrocution. However, when Ralph received a second autopsy from the Walter Reed Army Medical Center, the pathologist, Lieutenant Colonel Robert W. Herzog, believed that Ralph's facial injuries could not have been caused by a short fall onto a carpeted floor and thought it looked like he was beaten. Herzog was particularly perturbed by Ralph's high blood alcohol content at the time of his death, as Ralph was known for having a low tolerance for alcohol. Herzog stated, quote, "His motor function was so impaired he could not carry out the scheme police described to kill himself. In my view, his death was not self-inflicted," end quote. In addition, there was no evidence found to indicate that alcohol had been consumed in Ralph's motel room, and even though the Holiday Inn had a bar, a private investigator hired by ILSA was unable to find any employees or witnesses who could recall seeing Ralph buy or drink alcohol at the bar or at a nearby saloon on the date of his death. Well, ILSA decided to take her husband's advice by hiring a corporate affairs attorney to file a pair of lawsuits which named officials from the Army, the FBI, and the CIA as defendants, as she believed they had played a direct or indirect role in Ralph's death. It turned out that a decade earlier, Ralph had been recruited by both the U.S. Army Intelligence Agency's Counterintelligence Corps and the FBI, and that his job as a quote-unquote special courier was actually a cover for his work as a counterintelligence agent. In fact, Ralph was technically a double agent in an espionage operation in which he would intentionally feed disinformation to the Soviet Union and the KGB. Ralph was considered to be a particularly strong candidate for this assignment because he originally hailed from Czechoslovakia, and since Ralph's father had divorced his mother when he was young, she stayed behind in their homeland when they emigrated to the United States. Therefore, it would be easier for the Soviets to believe that Ralph was willing to sell them classified military secrets, and one of the rewards Ralph would receive was special treatment for his mother, who would be provided with a new house and a cash allowance in Soviet-controlled Czechoslovakia. Ralph's first official assignment took place when he traveled to Mexico City in December of 1966 to visit the Soviet embassy there, which is known for being one of their primary headquarters for espionage. After requesting a meeting with KGB officials, Ralph told them that he was willing to sell them stolen documents which outlined the latest developments in the United States government's missile and radar systems. The KGB agreed to the deal, and over the course of the next several years, Ralph would have a number of clandestine meetings with Soviet agents in which he provided them with those documents. From 1968 until 1970, Ralph was stationed in Germany and made frequent trips to Switzerland in order to conduct these exchanges. When Ralph was transferred to Fort Bliss and moved his family to El Paso, he would continue these meetups with the Russians by crossing the border into Mexico every 3 months or so. However, the Soviets did not realize that Ralph was providing them with documents which were intentionally laden with misleading information about how to build missiles using inoperative technology which did not actually work. For example, Ralph once provided them with documentation about a multi-tube missile launcher which was designed to fire 10 missiles at once. In actuality, when the US had already attempted to build this launcher, it tipped over because of its large size, and there was no conceivable way it could have functioned. But since the US had wasted millions of dollars investing in this launcher, they hoped that Ralph could trick the Soviets into wasting money, time, and resources on projects that were destined to fail. Most importantly, this operation also functioned as a means for Ralph to expose Soviet spies, and he was able to provide the Army with the names of at least 14 previously unidentified KGB operatives. In total, it was estimated that Ralph was paid around $100,000 by the Soviets for his information, and while he always turned the money over to his superiors, they sometimes let Ralph spend it on himself to purchase items like a new car in order to make the Russians think he was profiting from his work. According to ILSA, even though Ralph did not tell her that much about his work, he seemed to enjoy it until he returned from one assignment in 1972 and told her, quote, "I don't like what they make me do this time." Ralph seemed to imply that he was being asked to sell out his country and was getting himself in too deep, stating, quote, "They'll never let me go." Ralph soon requested an assignment in South Korea, which kept him away from his family for about a year. When Ralph finally returned to El Paso, Ilsa noticed that the family seemed to get followed a lot by vehicles with army stickers, but Ralph assured her that this was standard procedure and there was nothing to worry about. In July of 1974, Ralph and Ilsa went on a vacation to Germany, and while Ilsa spent time visiting family, Ralph left on a side trip to Vienna, Austria, to meet up with some of his Soviet contacts. When Ralph returned about a week later, he had a large sum of money, and he and Ilsa soon returned to the U.S. However, when Ilsa was cleaning out Ralph's suitcase, she was surprised to come across photographs of Ralph alongside the General Secretary of the Communist Party, Leonid Brezhnev, the most powerful man in the Soviet Union. Ralph responded by telling her, quote, "You must never tell anyone you saw those pictures. They could cost us our lives. You must never look at them again," end quote. By 1976, Ralph was nearing 30 years of service in the army and was planning to retire in July. At the start of the year, Ralph went to meet with an FBI contact and returned with phony immigration cards for himself, Ilsa, and Karen. He said there was a chance they might all have to relocate to Canada under new identities and instructed Ilsa to hide the identification. On March the 29th, Ralph traveled to San Francisco for a debriefing where he would be given a seemingly routine polygraph exam by Army Intelligence. But to everyone's surprise, the results showed that Ralph was being deceptive during his answers to some of the questions, most of which involved passing unauthorized information to the Soviets. After failing the polygraph 3 times, Ralph was advised to return to El Paso for a few days to think about his answers before he was ordered to report to Fort Meade in Maryland for further debriefing on April the 4th. Once again, every time Ralph was administered a new polygraph, he wound up failing it. On April the 8th, Ralph phoned Ilsa to inform her that an Army warrant officer would be visiting their home to retrieve some papers of his. Sure enough, a warrant officer soon arrived, and after removing one of the back panels of the family stereo set, he grabbed a folder and a black metal box. It would later emerge that Ralph had been working on a book about his experiences as a double agent, which he was hoping to publish following his retirement, even though counterintelligence agents were not supposed to keep notes about their work. This may have been one of the reasons why Ralph was showing signs of deception on his polygraphs, as the black box and folder apparently contained a manuscript he was working on, as well as notes and research materials. But even though Ralph had confessed about writing this book, his polygraphs were still showing signs of deception. Ralph was known for having a quote-unquote loose tongue whenever he was drunk, so while he was at Fort Meade, Louis Martel took him out drinking in hopes that he might inadvertently spill some important information. Martel reportedly told Ralph that as long as he told the army the full truth about everything, he would not be prosecuted or punished. He would receive letters of immunity, and the worst thing that would happen is that his espionage operation would finally come to an end. In spite of this, Ralph never revealed anything useful, and even though Martel admitted that he and Ralph drank and talked for about 6 hours on April the 9th, the army always denied providing him with any alcohol on the 13th. Even though Ralph had spent most of his time in Maryland staying at a Howard Johnson's Motor Lodge located near Fort Meade, he was moved to the Holiday Inn in Jessup on the 13th and given one last polygraph test in his motel room, which he wound up failing. The last known person to have seen Ralph alive was the polygraph examiner, who left the room at around 2:30 p.m. Ralph's superiors decided that the following day they were going to subject him to a hostile interrogation session in which he would be interrogated under the assumption that he was a traitor. They maintained that they never told Ralph about this, but he wound up being found dead later that evening. In the Army's eyes, Ralph may have elected to take his own life for fear that he was going to be outed as a traitor who sold unauthorized secrets to the Soviets. While Ralph had always been thorough about reporting all the money he had received from them, his superiors discovered that shortly before his death, Ralph's mother had received a cash payment from a KGB agent in Czechoslovakia, which he failed to tell them about. Even if Ralph had not actually done anything illegal, the army theorized that he may have become despondent and suicidal, over the idea that his days as a counterintelligence agent were over. While Elsa continued to believe that there was no way her husband's death was a suicide, and her lawsuits against the Army, FBI, and CIA generated enough publicity that Ralph's story wound up being featured on an episode of the TV show 60 Minutes in 1980. While one of Ilsa's lawsuits was dismissed, her second suit was settled out of court in 1982, and the armed forces decided to posthumously award Ralph the Legion of Merit in recognition for his service to his country. But Ilsa stated that she would not be satisfied until she uncovered the full truth behind Ralph's death, and all attempts to retrieve the black box containing the manuscript and materials for his book were unsuccessful. The story captured the attention of journalists Joe and Susan Trento, who performed their own independent investigation into the case. They consulted with a number of electricians, who all believed that the 110 volts of electricity which supposedly passed through Ralph's body could not have caused the unexplained marks, bruises, and injuries found on his arms and hands. The Trentos teamed up with a former Marine Corps intelligence officer named William R. Corson to publish a book titled Widows, Four American Spies, The Wives They Left Behind, and the KGB's Crippling of Western Intelligence. It chronicled four different stories about American spies who were killed under suspicious circumstances in the line of duty, and one of them was Ralph Sigler. The book was released in May of 1989, and in November of that year, Ralph's story would be the subject of a segment on an episode of Unsolved Mysteries. Unfortunately, it failed to turn up any additional answers about Ralph's death, and Ilsa would pass away in 2009 at the age of 81. So after 45 years, the actual truth about what happened to Ralph Sigler remains up for debate. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. So Unsolved Mysteries featured their fair share of segments about members of the military being found dead under strange circumstances, and even though the higher-ups ruled their deaths to be suicide or accidental, the victims' families were convinced they were murdered and that the military was orchestrating a cover-up. In some of these cases, the victim would imply that they had become involved in some sort of secret, potentially dangerous operation, and when they later turned up dead, this only fueled the family's suspicions that they were killed because they knew too much. However, while the cloak and dagger elements of many of the other military-themed segments on Unsolved Mysteries were probably heavily exaggerated, what makes Ralph Sigler's story stand out is that he was most definitely the real deal, as he spent years working in espionage with Soviet spies and did a lot of great things in service of his country before his untimely end. It would be difficult enough for Ralph's loved ones to accept the possibility that he took his own life, but I'm sure it was particularly painful for them to believe he might have done so because he had betrayed his country. Near the end of the Unsolved Mysteries segment, Robert Stack made this statement, quote, "Was Ralph Sigler a traitor or a hero? If he committed suicide because he knew he betrayed his country, he was a traitor. If he was murdered by the KGB as punishment for his disclosure of their secrets, then he was a hero. His family will not rest until they know just who Ralph Sigler really was." End quote. Well, I'm not sure that the truth about this case is so black and white, and when researching this story, I learned that there was a ton of information that the Unsolved Mysteries segment left out. For starters, they did not even mention that a handwritten note, which could have been a suicide note, was found in Ralph's motel room, and even if he wasn't expressing his intention to take his own life, the note implies that he was not in a great place mentally. Two other key details they left out, which I find particularly important, were that Ralph was only a few months away from his planned retirement before he died, and he was planning to publish a book about his experiences. I mean, I can see Ralph's superiors being more open to this idea after the Cold War came to an end several years later, but there's no way this book was going to fly back in 1976. You almost get the sense this was some sort of midlife crisis for Ralph, as he had devoted 30 years of his life to serving his country, but he couldn't really tell people much about what he did, so his next step was to publish a tell-all book, even though this was forbidden. This was likely one of the reasons Ralph was registering signs of deception during his polygraph tests, but even after he came clean and told his superiors about the book, he still could not pass the tests, which seemed to indicate there was still more he was not telling them. Now, I'm sure you're all aware that polygraphs are most definitely not 100% reliable, so the fact that Ralph kept failing them does not necessarily mean he was lying. However, I have to assume that Ralph had already taken a number of polygraphs in the past and had no issues passing them, and he was so well regarded by his superiors that they kept giving him the benefit of the doubt. When Ralph flunked the first test in San Francisco, they actually assumed there might be something wrong with the machine, but he failed two more times, which is why they told Ralph to return home for a few days to think about what was bothering him before they summoned him to Fort Meade. It sounds like if Ralph had managed to pass just one of these tests, they would have disregarded all of his previous failures, but he just could not do it. But it's possible that Ralph flunked the test for reasons that were far less malicious than him being a traitor. The questions which registered the most signs of deception involved Ralph being asked if he ever passed unauthorized information to the Soviets, and he may have actually done that, though not because he wanted to profit. Every piece of information that Ralph passed along to his Soviet contacts had to be cleared by his superiors, but apparently, things eventually reached the point where the Russians started to notice that a lot of the stuff that Ralph was providing to them was low-quality garbage, and they became openly angry towards him. So Ralph may have taken the initiative to provide the Russians with legitimate information which may not have been authorized by his superiors, but it was still not important enough information that it would have jeopardized national security. He didn't do this to betray his country, but to regain the Soviets' trust and avoid derailing the entire espionage operation. If Ralph did this, he likely meant well, but of course, this is the sort of thing which would register as deception if you answered questions on a polygraph. I mentioned earlier that Ralph helped uncover the identities of a number of KGB spies, but perhaps the most prominent was a man named Rudolf Albert Herman, who lived and worked in the United States for several years. In fact, Herman was such a deep cover spy that it was often difficult for his own superiors to make contact with him, so Ralph was sometimes used as a conduit to pass information back and forth between Herman and the Soviets. Now, as you recall, Ralph had originally been recruited by both the Army and the FBI, but since the FBI was concerned about the Army's internal security and considered Herman to be such a valuable asset, they asked Ralph to keep the details about his interactions with Herman a secret from his superiors. During his Unsolved Mysteries interview, Joe Trento provided his own theory about why this could have tainted Ralph's polygraph tests. If Ralph was following the FBI's instructions and not mentioning his relationship with Herman during his questioning, then this could have registered as deception. Ralph may have been hoping that the FBI would eventually step in and explain everything to the Army, but they never did. Incidentally, in 1980, it was revealed that Herman had been arrested by the FBI and agreed to cooperate with them as a double agent by reporting on KGB activities. As a result, Herman was able to avoid prosecution, and he and his family were granted asylum and given new identities. But while this provides a potential explanation for why Ralph failed his polygraphs, you also have to remember that he was told by his superiors that he would not be prosecuted if he just told them the truth about everything he did. If Ralph admitted to lying about Rudolf Herman, or that he'd passed some low-level intelligence to the Soviets to avoid having his cover blown, then I'm not sure these offenses would have been egregious enough for him to face serious punishment. So could Ralph have crossed the line and done something so unforgivable that he felt like suicide was a much better option than telling the truth? I mean, Ilsa had once discovered a photo of Ralph alongside Leonid Brezhnev, which seemed to imply that he had gotten himself in pretty deep with the Soviets, and may have gone from being a double agent to a triple agent. I know that the Army had been planning to subject him to a hostile interrogation the day after his death, which would definitely provide him with a potential motive to kill himself, but they claimed they had not yet informed Ralph that they were going to do this. I'll state right up front that one of the biggest obstacles to believing that Ralph's death was anything but suicide is the fact that he was found inside a room that had been locked and bolted from the inside. There were no signs of forced entry, His room was on the third floor, with no indication that the windows had been tampered with, and the only other point of entry was the door to the adjacent motel room, which had been bolted shut. While Ralph's method of suicide, which involved wrapping wires around his arms and electrocuting himself, seemed like a very unusual way to kill yourself, it does fit the profile of a very desperate man using ingenuity to come up with a way to end his life with the materials he had available to him inside that motel room. The thing with a lot of these older cases from Unsolved Mysteries involving suspicious suicides is that there was less understanding of mental health issues back then. Even though it's been argued that Ralph would have had no reason to kill himself, since he could have avoided any punishment if he just told the truth about everything, it's possible there was something else going on inside his head which was making him feel suicidal. We now know that it's not uncommon for people who show no outward signs of depression to shock everyone by suddenly deciding to take their own life. There were definitely signs that Ralph was displaying paranoid behavior in the months prior to his death. For instance, Ilsa claimed that Ralph once told her that an Army intelligence officer he worked with was found shot to death in the desert near the White Sands Missile Range in January of 1976. While his death was ruled to be a suicide, Ralph did not believe it, and said that the U.S. government was involved in a conspiracy in which they were killing off their own agents. Well, when the Washington Post published an extensive article about this story in February of 1977, they attempted to dig up information about the suicide of this intelligence officer, which supposedly took place 1 year earlier, but they could find no verification that this death had ever occurred. And you also have to remember that Ralph went to the trouble of acquiring phony immigration cards to possibly move himself, his wife, and his daughter to Canada following his retirement. So could Ralph have been suffering from paranoid delusions, which gave him the false impression that his life was in danger? The last time Ilsa heard from Ralph was during the bizarre phone call she'd received from him on the day of his death, in which he told her to get a lawyer and sue the Army. A theory presented by Joe Trento during his Unsolved Mysteries interview is that Ralph could have made this call under duress while being tortured by the KGB. Ilsa said she heard what she described as the screeching sound of an electronic apparatus in the background during the call, and the Soviets were known for using electrocution as a method of torture, so perhaps they forced Ralph to make this call in order to compel Ilsa to direct all of her attention towards the Army after they killed him. However, the Unsolved Mysteries segment neglects to mention the letter Ralph sent to Ilsa in which he gave her the exact same instructions and even outlined a specific list of defendants from the Army and the FBI for Ilsa to name in the lawsuit. I should also mention that he advised Ilsa to demand the return of the materials from the black box, which had been retrieved from his home a few days earlier, that supposedly contained notes and a manuscript for the book he was working on. Even though Ilsa did not receive the letter until after Ralph's death, it was dated on April the 10th, 3 days before he was killed. We know that Ralph's whereabouts can be accounted for before the afternoon of April the 13th, so there's no way the KGB forced him to write that letter under duress. This seems to indicate that Ralph was paranoid that something was going to happen to him for quite some time, but what would have compelled him to phone Ilsa that afternoon if he had already sent her that letter? If he wasn't being tortured while he was making the call, perhaps he had already made the decision to take his own life. But you also have to factor in that Ralph made another phone call to his daughter Karen earlier that day, in which he also sounded distressed, and that call abruptly cut off while he was in mid-sentence. The exact wording Ralph used in his letter to Ilsa was, quote, "Should anything happen to me, suicide, death, or accident, sue the U.S. Army for being the cause, naming specifically the following as defendants," end quote. It's very interesting that Ralph specifically mentioned suicide in the letter, which could be interpreted as him implying that he was suicidal, or he might have been paranoid that someone was planning to murder him and make his death look like a suicide. Well, let's take a closer look at how these events unfolded. One thing I do find a bit odd is that when Ralph originally traveled to Fort Meade for debriefing, he spent the first several days staying at a Howard's Johnson Motor Lodge before he was moved to the Holiday Inn in Jessup, which was located further away. It's not entirely clear why they did this, but here's a really strange account from a maid at the Holiday Inn who interacted with Ralph on a few occasions prior to his death. The maid claimed that when she showed up for work on the morning of April the 14th, she thought she saw Ralph walking into one of the third floor rooms with a woman. Of course, this would have been impossible, since Ralph was already dead at that point, but the maid stated, quote, "If it wasn't his twin, it was his ghost." Well, one theory which has been put forward is that the reason Ralph was moved to the Holiday Inn was because he had a scheduled meetup there with one of his Soviet contacts, in which he was supposed to receive important information. But since Ralph wound up dead before the meeting, his army intelligence superiors sent a double or a lookalike there in Ralph's place, and that's who the maid saw. That does sound like a pretty absurd scenario, but since we're talking about a story which involves spies and espionage, I suppose anything's possible. One thing which has never made sense to me is that it doesn't sound like anyone was watching Ralph's motel room on the evening of April the 13th, as they didn't bother to check on him until word spread that Ilse had received a distressing phone call from him. Given that Ralph kept failing the polygraphs, and a decision had been made to give him a hostile interrogation the following day on the assumption that he was a traitor, you'd think they might have considered him to be a potential flight risk and kept a guard on his room. The big issue is that we have a window of over 8 hours before Ralph's body was discovered, in which his whereabouts are unaccounted for, so it's unclear if he ever left his room at all during that time period. Ralph's final phone call to Ilse took place at around 4 p.m. Mountain Time in El Paso, which, accounting for time zone differences, means that he was still alive at 6 p.m. Eastern Time in Maryland. We know that Ralph took his final polygraph inside the room, and the last confirmed person to see him alive was the polygraph examiner who left at around 2:30. However, the official Army report makes a brief mention of unnamed persons discussing the bad test results with Ralph shortly after the examiner left. We know that the Army was planning to escalate things to a hostile interrogation, but what if they decided they weren't going to wait until the next day? Instead of Ralph attaching the wires to his own arms in order to electrocute himself, what if this method was actually used by others to torture him? Quite frankly, the idea of Ralph being killed by his own people during an interrogation session gone wrong is more plausible than him being tortured and murdered by KGB agents. There's nothing to indicate that the KGB even knew Ralph's whereabouts on that day, and would they have felt the need to stage Ralph's death to look like a suicide? And here's another odd potential discrepancy. The official police report stated that Ralph was clothed at the time his body was found, but the Holiday Inn manager would later say that he came upon some discarded paper negatives from police Polaroid photos in a trash bin, and they appeared to show Ralph lying on the floor, naked. Of course, without having seen these negatives, I have no idea if the manager is telling the truth, or if he may have misinterpreted what he saw, but it does make you wonder if Ralph might have been tortured when he was nude, before his body was redressed to support the suicide theory. But then again, if that's the case, why take photographs of Ralph's nude body to begin with? Another weird detail is that Ilse claimed that the last time she attempted to phone Ralph's room from El Paso on the night of April the 13th was at 10 p.m. Mountain Time, which would have been midnight in Maryland. But since Ralph's body was reportedly discovered at 11 p.m. Eastern Time, why didn't anyone answer the phone in Ralph's room? Overall, I think the biggest discrepancy which has never been adequately addressed is the amount of alcohol in Ralph's system at the time of his death. There's been a lot of skepticism about whether someone that intoxicated would have been capable of orchestrating an elaborate suicide, especially when you consider that Ralph was known for having a low tolerance for alcohol. And even if you put that aside, where did Ralph consume this alcohol to begin with? I can definitely see someone getting very drunk before going through the act of taking their own life, but from what I can tell, no empty bottles or any traces of alcohol were found inside Ralph's room. And if he went elsewhere to get drunk, how come no one remembered seeing him that night? The detail about Ralph's high blood alcohol content is particularly interesting when you remember that his superior, Louis Martel, took him out and got him drunk a few days earlier to see if it could compel him to reveal something, which shed some light on why he kept failing the polygraphs. Apparently, Ralph said that his Soviet contacts had gotten him drunk on a few occasions, and he feared that he might have revealed some incriminating information to them without even remembering it, which might explain why Martel attempted the same thing. So if Ralph was interrogated and tortured in the hours prior to his death, I could see someone forcing him to consume large amounts of alcohol in hopes that it might loosen his tongue. If it was the army who caused Ralph's death, I don't think they would have been brazen enough to torture him inside the motel room, so they could have transported him to another location for interrogation. If he was beaten and tortured, then this would account for the unexplained injuries to Ralph's face and his arms. I do agree that it's unlikely that Ralph could have sustained serious injuries by falling only about 6 feet or so off a stack of chairs and landing face first on a carpet, but without actually seeing any photographs of his face, it's hard to make that judgment call. The same logic applies to the bruises and marks on Ralph's arms. His family did not believe they could have been caused by the electrical jolts which traveled through the wires, but since I haven't personally seen any photographs of these bruises or marks, I can't say for certain. If Ralph was being tortured, his interrogators may not have had any intention of killing him, but caused his death accidentally when they went overboard while electrocuting him. Once they received word that Ilsa was attempting to reach Ralph in his motel room, they may have decided to stage the scene to look like a suicide before they convinced management to allow them inside the locked room to, quote-unquote, discover his body. But of course, there are still some major holes with this theory, one of which is Ralph's final phone call to Ilsa. If Ralph was being tortured by the KGB, then yes, I could see them forcing him to make that call under duress. But if he was being interrogated by his own superiors in the army, why would they have him phone his wife and tell her to sue the army? I guess the alternate explanation is that Ralph could have convinced them to allow him to phone Ilsa for other reasons, but then he suddenly took them by surprise by saying those things before they cut him off. Obviously, the biggest issue with the homicide theory is still the fact that the room's door was locked and bolted from the inside at the time Ralph was found, so unless someone involved in this conspiracy was an escape artist, or they had a tremendous talent for jimmying locks, I have no idea how they would have pulled this off. However, a private investigator hired by Ilsa did come up with one potential explanation for this, because after Louis Martel and the motel manager entered the room together and found Ralph's body, the manager rushed downstairs to call for an ambulance, leaving Martel alone. So theoretically, the person who killed Ralph could have been hiding somewhere, like the bathroom or the closet, and if Martel was complicit in what happened, the killer could have used this opportunity to slip out of the room. But this idea still seems incredibly risky and leaves an awful lot to chance, since there's no way this sort of thing could have been predicted ahead of time. I can't get over the fact that when Ralph first failed the polygraphs in San Francisco, the army seemed to give him every possible opportunity to make things right. I mean, the fact that they let Ralph return home to El Paso for a few days before they summoned him to Fort Meade seems to indicate that they did not consider him to be a flight risk, so I think they genuinely believed that the polygraph results were just some sort of misunderstanding that could be cleared up. But at the same time, if Ralph had really done something heinous like commit treason, this would have been the perfect opportunity for him to flee the country, as he already had fake immigration cards set up for himself and his family to relocate to Canada. And of course, once Ralph went to Fort Meade, they let him stay there for 9 days before he turned up dead, so it certainly doesn't sound like his superiors had murderous intentions on their mind. I will say that if Ralph didn't actually do anything wrong, and this whole series of events unfolded because of the unreliability of polygraph tests, then that's a major tragedy. I know that one of the arguments in the lawsuits Ilsa filed is that even if the army did not murder her husband, they may have indirectly caused his death by putting him in an incredibly stressful situation in which he felt that suicide was his best option. Overall, when you look at the big picture, there are more signs which point to this being suicide than murder, but the biggest discrepancies, such as Ralph's injuries and the alcohol in his system, are troubling enough that you can't say this with 100% certainty. But every time I explore a case involving a suspicious-looking suicide, there's one big question I always ask myself. Is the suicide theory less plausible than the homicide theory? Well, in this case, I'm not so sure. I do find it easier to believe that an isolated, stressed-out man, holed up inside a locked motel room, might have finally reached his breaking point and improvised an elaborate suicide, rather than an outside party using a bunch of elaborate, complicated tricks to commit murder inside this same locked room. It's kind of like the Ray Rivera case from Unsolved Mysteries. On the surface, it seems implausible that a person could leap off the roof of a hotel and land at a spot 43 feet away from the edge, but it's even less plausible that someone could commit murder by throwing someone off a building to a spot 43 feet away. I'm not saying I'm fully convinced that Ralph Sigler's death was a suicide, but I certainly do not think the idea should be discounted. If Ralph did make the decision to end his own life, then there's no way we could possibly know what was going on inside his mind at that time. I know that Ralph's family never received conclusive answers about what happened to him, but since the army decided to posthumously award him the Legion of Merit, that at least did restore his reputation a little bit. I do not think they would have done that if they legitimately believed that Ralph was a traitor. During his time as a double agent, Ralph may have done some things that he technically wasn't supposed to, but I do get the sense that he genuinely loved his country and would never have done anything to betray it. But whether the strain of being a double agent ultimately proved to be too much for Ralph to go on living, we'll probably never know. All that being said, should you happen to have any information about the death of Ralph Sigler to suggest he was the victim of foul play, please contact the appropriate authorities. But if you just have your own thoughts about what happened, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email to robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Now the reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. We produced a bunch of exclusive bonus episodes for our patrons in tiers 2 and 3, and this past month, I released an episode which covered two cases from Unsolved Mysteries involving young women who were supposedly afflicted with amnesia after surviving a violent attack. The stories of Kyra Cook and Sarah Powell. And for our patrons in Tier 3, I've also recorded another new audio commentary track, which can be played over a classic episode of Unsolved Mysteries. I'd also like to give a shout out to our most recent listeners who have signed up with us on Patreon this week, and they are Jason M., Katie F., Katie H., Stephanie S., Steffi B., Chris B., Ann F., and Lynn F. Thank you all so much for your support. And before I bring this episode to a close, I would like to play a promo for a spin-off podcast I've been working on with two co-hosts, in which I will be providing a more in-depth exploration into cases I've covered on The Trail Went Cold. It officially launches on April the 8th, the day after this episode's release, and is titled The Path Went Chilly. Have a listen. Hi, I'm Robin Warder from The Trail Went Cold. If you are unfamiliar with my other podcast, I often cover stories from the television show Unsolved Mysteries. For the past 5 years, you've heard me talk about these cases on my own, but now's your chance to hear me have in-depth discussions about them with other people. I want to welcome you to my new project, The Path Went Chilly, where I will be discussing in-depth with my two good friends and co-hosts cases that I've covered on The Trail Went Cold. Meet my co-hosts. First one up is Jules.
Hi, I'm Jules from the podcast Riddle Me That True Crime, and I have a PhD in transpersonal counseling. I'm not a psychologist or a diagnostician, so don't get too excited. But I can't wait to analyze these cases with these two amazing humans. You've already met Robin, now meet Dr. Ashley Wellman.
Hi, I'm Ashley. I have a PhD in criminology, law, and society, and I specialize in trauma victims and survivors. I've spent a great deal of time working with families left behind after homicides with a cold case unit based out of Florida, and I'm also a professor of criminology. I'm so excited to be chatting with two of my best friends about the cases that everyone can't seem to get enough of.
We hope in doing so that we will have a clearer perspective of what may have transpired. Oftentimes, Ashley will be totally in the dark.
Jules and I will be telling Ashley a story she may not know much about, so all of her reactions are genuine.
We will be releasing on all major platforms April 8th.
We hope you will join us as we attempt to heat up some ice-cold cases.
The Path Went Chilly will be available every Thursday on all major podcast platforms. I'd also like to mention that later this year, provided that it becomes safe to travel again, The Trail Went Cold is going to be appearing on Podcast Row at the very first CrimeCon UK, which is being held at the Leonardo Royal Hotel and Spa in London. I had previously stated that CrimeCon UK was set to take place on the weekend of June 12th and 13th, but due to certain restrictions, they have elected to postpone it until the weekend of September the 25th and 26th, so fingers crossed that it will still happen as planned. If you would like to purchase tickets to either event, we have a special promo code you can use to get a 10% discount. So to receive 10% off, visit crimecon.co.uk and enter the promo code COLE21. That's COLE21. In addition, I also wanted to provide another reminder that I hold live streaming sessions on a platform called Get Vocal. Every Thursday night from 7 until 8 p.m. Eastern Time, I host what is essentially an after show for each week's podcast episode, where I have an interactive discussion about the featured case from said episode and answer questions and address comments from listeners. I always include a link to these sessions in our show notes, so be sure to check there for more information or visit getvocal.com. That's GETVOKL.com. I just wanted to give another shout-out to my supporters at the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. I need to provide a big thanks to McGill Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. So have yourself a good week and join us next Wednesday for another brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold.